Welcome to episode 96 of the Geocaching Podcast. I'm your host, XplunkX, with Daryl W. Foran.
Fonzie Ryder.
If you want to participate on our show tonight, please call 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners. And that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now to Participate button in the right-hand corner. If you can call our voicemail line during the week, that's 206-350-3GPS. And on Twitter, we can be found at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Well, Montu, Daryl, it's good to see you back on our show, Montu. How have you been? Well, I know how you've been. You're sick, but...
Yeah, do you really need to ask?
How are you? Should I ask that? How are you?
Well, I'm doing much better. Thank you very much. It's been a pain getting over being sick. But all in all, finally getting over it. Voice still a little bit scratchy, as you can tell. But I was crazy enough to go camping with our youth group this last weekend. We were camping out at the Sartoma Youth Ranch just over by Dade City. Thankfully, close enough that I could come home at night, and that way we could take care of the dog because we couldn't find anybody to take care of him over the weekend. Woke up Sunday morning, pouring down rain, and wound up having to give the director of our club a phone call and let her know to get out of the campsite immediately. There was a tornado watch just to the north of them, and luckily they got out and nobody was hurt, but... When we all got everything back to the church, we wound up turning the church's dining hall into one big tent city. About half a dozen tents pitched inside the church. That's definitely a sight to see, but nobody thought to take a picture of it.
Oh, that's too bad. That would have been a good one for TwitPics. Well, nothing so exciting, I'm afraid. We talked with a couple of... cashers for cam interviews, and those will be coming up in the next few weeks. We did some caching, not a whole lot because it's still pretty icky out here, but I did get a chance to play with both the PN40 with its new software, and I got one of those spot messengers and got to play with that a bit as well. Not really too sure about that one yet, but the okay response, because it has a few buttons on the thing, and for those who don't know what the spot messenger is, it's a satellite communication device, we'll call it, but it's a GPS with a satellite uplink, not just, you know, down, so it's two-way, but it only has three buttons on it that actually do something. There's an I'm okay, a help button, and a 911 button. The 911, if you push it, they'll figure out where you are and dispatch the appropriate medical crews, medical rescue kind of stuff, to that location. But the other two just notify by email or SMS whomever you have on that list. So when you hit one of those two buttons, it sends a message that you pre-configure of either I'm okay or I need help. And my experience with it has been if I go to... the OK button and press that at least 10 minutes to get the message on my phone via SMS, or more frequently it seemed to be about a 20-minute lag to get that message. So it's not as quick as I had hoped for, and you know, well, I'll have to play with that and see what it really does when I'm out of the city, because right now I'm caching around in the city a bit. But it's a nice thing to have just because of that 911 feature. So if I'm out of cell phone range, which happens frequently now that I'm on AT&T with its lack of coverage, it's nice to have that. Hey, Andy, what have you been up to?
Well, Daryl, I had to think this though. You know, at least 20 minutes later that you're still okay when your SMS messenger email comes through, with the spot messenger.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, you gotta kind of wonder if you're under attack by like a cougar or something. It's certainly not going to get anyone there fast enough for that.
No, but they'd be able to know where you're at when you're done with that.
Yeah, they can at least find the bones.
Sure, sure. Now, for me, my kids and my wife were sick over the weekend, so not a whole lot happened. My wife's grandma's house is kind of getting bought by the local school there, they knew it was going to happen, but they just didn't know when. And it's happening a little bit quicker than they would like. So they were tearing down some of the fencing around their house. So we got to, it's been tough kind of to see things go like that, and having to have them move out. But, we did get some fence to put up around our house, stuff that we took down from their house. So that's, going to be helpful. Sunday, Cliff from GSPN.TV went geocaching. He had never been caching before, and he had a few questions, and, he basically Twittered everybody and basically said, "Hey, I don't know how to cache at all, and I want to do it." And he had heard from me before that I do it, so he Twittered everybody to see, you know, how to go about doing that. And I was able to help him a little bit for one of his podcasts, just kind of answer a few questions. So I got that recording pulled down. I just want to play that a little bit for you, what I had said to Cliff. So sit back, listen a little bit. Here's my entrance into that show.
All right, folks. Well, I was about ready to head out the door with some great information, but before I do, I just want to let you know just the awesomeness of social media, Twitter, Facebook, and all that other great stuff. As I had thought, I knew that if given the opportunity, Andy Lehman would be out there with the opportunity to share his wisdom and knowledge with us as well. And of course, he finally saw my Twitter message and immediately responded, "Hey, I'm still here to help if you still need it." So, Andy, hey, welcome.
Hey, Cliff, how's it going today?
I've never been better. We're getting ready to go out and do our very first family geocaching adventure.
It's fun. I think you'll like it. So how can I help you with it?
Well, the great news is that, you know, I sent out a Twitter message saying, "Hey, I just need some people out there with some experience that I can ask some very specific questions." And I'm sure you probably know who Arthur Pennington is.
Yeah.
So anyway, Art came on and excuse me, joined the chat room while I was out there. We were able to dial him up, and he gave me some information. But since I have you on the phone, I don't want to leave you out with some of your experience. There are a lot of people who are listening to this episode of My Crazy Life, which is going to go out on the public free feed for everybody to hear. It's our very first geocaching adventure. What are some advice or some tips that you would give to somebody who's geocaching for the very first time?
I would say, definitely don't always, if your geocache says or your GPS says that you're right at the spot, don't always trust that, because there's an error rate. You know, the people that have placed the cache, their GPS could have been a little bit off. Your GPS could be a little bit off. So just kind of make your search radius out a little bit, and like 50 feet or so, look for something that doesn't exactly look normal. Maybe a pile of sticks, things like that, that are kind of piled up, things that you wouldn't just naturally find out in, you know, where you're at. Look for something that's a little bit out of the ordinary. That'd be my advice.
Very cool. Now, one of the things that it says there, you know, we kind of read the frequently asked questions and some things about, you know, not taking anything unless you place something of equal or greater value. Do you suggest my family, what we're thinking about, just going and just finding it, seeing what's there, and kind of just leaving it and just signing a logbook? Would you suggest that, or would you suggest that we go and take something with us and for our first adventure?
If you've got something like a McDonald's toy, something that's, you know, not too expensive, something that you may have, you know, got from McDonald's or just have laying around the house, I would take it with you just in case you see something in the cache that you want to take. Then you could, you know, place it in. So if you've got something, go ahead and take it with you.
Okay. Good advice there. Applications. I went ahead and I paid for the $10 application called Geocaching. It's the one that, you know, it has the same logo as the geocaching.com mm-hmm. website. Have you had any experience with that, or do you know some folks that have had some experience with that?
Yeah. One of the co-hosts on my podcast use that. I don't, because I just have the iPod. I don't have the iPhone, so I don't have the actual GPS in my iPod. But one of my co-hosts uses it, and he finds a lot of caches with it, so he has had success.
Very cool. Now, I have not set up an account, but this application that I downloaded, obviously it has a good listing there. It'll show you a map on how to get there, I guess, driving directions, and then once you park, you can hike the rest of the way to the thing using the I don't know what you call that. What do you call that when you hit the navigation button?
Yeah, it does, basically it directs you to the cache. Gotcha. That's what I would call it.
Okay, so basically we'll be using the, and it's like on the iPhone, it's like an electronic digital version of a compass, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gonna, I guess, count down the distance until you get to that area, and then of course, like you said, you give a broad search area, search base. Can you just explain to me what are some of the caches that you've seen in the past? Maybe some of the more interesting ones.
There's definitely some. The interesting ones that I like are ones that take a hike, you know, where you have a hike to get to them. A lot of the ones I like are ones that have like an ammo container that you're looking for, or like a big Tupperware container. There's also kinds that are like the little film canisters, things like that. Those aren't quite as fun to find, but they're still, those can be devious in where they're hidden, or anything smaller than that can be a little bit devious. I've seen like a little bolt that you have to unscrew, and it's like in the bolt. So those can be kind of devious. Those aren't as much fun to find with the kids because they don't have like a big box and, you know, like basically a reward at the end.
Gotcha.
So for me and my family, when we go out, we like to have the ones that have a payoff for the kids at the end, you know, like a box and some toys and things.
Now, let me ask you, have you guys created any caches of your own?
Yeah, we've had about 10 of them that we have created. Again, we like placing the ones that we like finding. So, you know, the ones that have big containers.
Very cool. Now, would you suggest that I need to, before I head out the door with the family, do I need to create an account at geocaching.com? Or do I just go ahead and sign up for one when I get back so that I can kind of log my experience?
You can do either, but I would definitely recommend having an account at geocaching.com. That way you can kind of keep track of the ones there that you've done. Geocaching is kind of another social type of activity. You'll see people's names on their logs, and then, you know, eventually you can do things that are like events, and you can even meet the other geocachers around. So I would recommend, I mean, do it before or after. It doesn't really matter, but I would definitely recommend signing up for an account.
Very cool. I'm excited about this. You've been talking about it for a very long time, Andy. And I told you a long time ago, I said, one day I'm going to have time and I'll have the equipment and I'll go and do it. And of course, when they came out with the iPhone 3G that had the GPS in it, it's like, okay, I'm just going to wait for the application to come out. And now all the applications were out there. And now it's beautiful, sunny, blue skies, and we're ready to go for it, man.
Well, good luck. Let us know how you go. You know, if you want to give us a call on our line, our voicemail line is 206-350-3GPS. Let us know how you do.
Very cool. And we definitely gave a good plug out there for Art's podcast. We also gave a great plug for you even before you contacted us, because I knew that you would be a great source of information for people as well. So
definitely.
Very cool, man. If you're interested, this is My Crazy Life episode 373 that'll be out there sooner or later.
Sure, I'll download it. Definitely, Cliff. Have fun and good luck.
All right, thanks a lot, Andy.
All right, see ya.
Well, we want to thank Cliff and Cliff for having us on or the geocaching podcast on. If you've not checked out any of their stuff, they can be found at gspn.tv. They do about, I think, 28 or 30 different shows that range anywhere from family shows to TV fan podcast shows. Things like that. Definitely check them out, gspn.tv. Well, moving on to our news tonight, we have a few different things that have come up in our news. Again, we're getting down close to the show number 100 on this podcast. And if you wish to send in any congrats or anything like that, give us a call at 206-350-3GPS or email an audio file to xpunkx@geocachingpodcast.info. Daryl, what as far as the geocaching world goes, I know we've seen a lot of new software soon, or has come out soon. What have you seen here?
Well, we've got yet another new application for caching on the iPhone, and it's called Caching. The app hit the iPhone or iTunes App Store on Saturday for $8.99. It loads GPX and LOC files, then provides the information in an easy-to-read format. It also includes a search screen that reminds me a lot of the radar in the Geocache Navigator, which I had come to really like, so it's kind of nice to see that one back. I did send the developer an email. He sent me a reviewer copy. I've had a chance to load it, play with it a little bit, but I haven't had a chance to really do much, so I hope to get to that before too long. But we are going to include the link to the user's guide in the show notes.
Well, we mentioned earlier on a previous podcast that the DeLorme PN40 now has support for the geocaching.com to send to Apple GPS's or caches directly to your GPS. Unfortunately, there's been no support in GPS Babel and GSAC for the unit, but leave it to the GSAC community, though. They will find a way. We will link to a macro that has been created in our show notes, which gives the GSAC community, or I'm sorry, the GSAC, the ability to talk to the PN40 through the JAM4AR app and the DeLorme Send to GPS plugin. So we'll go ahead and link that in our show notes, which can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. Garmin announced two new newbie series, the 1200 and the 1300 series units. They're smaller, thinner, and designed to be easier to carry for navigation in and out of the car. They are the first newbie devices to offer pedestrian navigation capability enabled through optional City Explorer maps. These new multi-mode navigators feature a public transit mode available as a download for select cities for between $9.99 and $14.99 each. The City Explorer allows the user to plan and use routes that can include public transit options such as buses, tramway, metro, suburban, and suburban rail systems. Members of these new lines feature free traffic alerts, lane assist, eco route, and text-to-speech. The 1200 series features a 3.5-inch touchscreen, while the 1300 series uses a 4.3-inch touchscreen. Suggested retail ranges from about $200 to $300 for the 1200 series, and $250 through $450 for the 1300 series. We'll link to that announcement in the show notes as well.
Well, tonight on the podcast, we had come across Lisa from the Cache Advance store. We know Lisa from Twitter. At least that's where I know her from, where I first got to see, you know, some of her posts and where I actually knew about Cache Advance. Lisa runs the hobby store that's called, it's Around Geocaching. So we wanted to talk a little bit tonight with Lisa about the store that she runs and just a little bit more about running a hobby store. Lisa, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, what was it that made you first go and try geocaching?
Well, it was quite some time ago. I was familiar with GPS units. I bought one for my father some time ago and taught him how to use it and thought it was pretty neat, a lot of fun little gadget to work with and play with. And I think I read an article actually in our local newspaper about geocaching and said, ah, that's the sport for me. So I ran out, bought myself a GPS, and have been quite hooked ever since.
So how long have you been caching?
I've been caching since 2002, so I'll be celebrating 7 years this summer.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's quite a long time. And I know that from watching you on Twitter that you've been teaching some classes on geocaching as well. When did you start teaching those?
It was about 2 years ago. I was approached by our local REI. They knew about our club, and I was our Washington State Geocaching Association. We have a chapter of that located here, headquartered in Spokane. It's for the Inland Empire. And which is a bigger part of Eastern Washington State. And I was president at that time, and he said, well, hey, you know, we'd like to get more information out about geocaching. So that's about how long I've been doing that. And now it's a partnership with Spokane Parks and Rec also. So it's a partnership between the two with REI and Parks and Rec.
So who is it that you're teaching then? Is it like kids or older groups or everyone or...
A little bit of everybody. Through Parks and Rec, it's been adults only. However, I also do teach in K-12 schools. So currently I'm at a kind of a case-by-case basis with different school districts, and I'll come in. I've taught youngest ages, fifth graders, and I've gone up to juniors in high school.
Well, that sounds like it's a very broad range and probably a lot of different lesson plans, if you would. So what's involved in teaching them?
Well, it really depends on, again, my audience. Just like you were saying, it's a broad range. With the fifth graders, it was just a matter of getting them interested and teaching them a little bit about how it works. And then we just spent most of the time actually hiding and or seeking caches that I had pre-hidden around the area. For older groups, it's a lot more involved. I can get more technical. And certainly with adults that are interested in that sort of thing, they really like the more technical aspect, how the satellites work, that sort of thing.
Now, how did you decide to go out and create a hobby store based around geocaching?
Well, that's a good question. Thanks for asking. Firstly, I don't know. I guess I don't think of it as a hobby store. I'm more of an outdoor recreation store. I like to think of myself as kind of the REI for geocaching. So I guess I don't think of, for me, caching as being so much a hobby. But it came to me about 3.5 years ago. I was having phone noodles with a friend and was just starting back in school and looking for a new hobby. Looking for a business aspect or some way to bring in a little bit more funds now that I was done with school. And she said, well, why don't you do something around geocaching? And I thought, oh, what a great idea. And while we were eating, I came up with the idea for my first product, which was Dr. B's Cache Repair Kit. And it's been kind of a long history since then.
All right. Now, what was your biggest surprise in the process of creating this store?
Well, I think one of the biggest surprises, I've been kind of thinking about that question here the last couple of minutes. A big surprise for me was actually becoming more of a distributor. Actually, a lot of my business is wholesale. I provide a lot of gear and products to other stores like mine, outdoor recreation stores or geocaching stores, and I'm also a supplier back to Groundspeak on some items too. So that was a big surprise, realizing, you know, a whole new area of doing business. And I'm also looking into setting up some more affiliates. So we're testing that process out right now, so how folks can also set up their own small store, too.
Now, do you have a physical store, or is it just online?
I do have the cache cave here. It's actually in my home, so it's available by appointment for folks to come and shop. So it's not a physical storefront, but it is set up like a store. If you go to my fan book or fan page on Facebook, there's some pictures there of the cache cave, and you can see, get an idea of what it looks like.
Now, would you think there's enough local interest to support a storefront for caching supplies?
That's a great question. Here in Spokane, I'm not quite sure that that would be the case. In order to support overhead and staffing, insurance, parking, utilities, all that's involved in a brick-and-mortar store. So I don't think here in Spokane that's really possible. So that's why I've got a broader range of different aspects of my business that I do that does support it. Maybe in a larger metropolitan area in a couple of years, as geocaching really takes off, I would like to hope that, yeah, there definitely would be enough interest to support a store.
Well, in some of the tweets, you've actually mentioned the cache cave and made comments about prepping things like the magnetic travelers. And you mentioned earlier the cache repair kits. It sounds like you're actually producing a lot of those items yourself. You know, what kind of stuff is it that you're actually producing there?
Good question. Thanks. Yeah. Well, a big part of what we produce is the travel bug decals for your vehicles, static cling decals and magnets. So that takes quite a bit of work putting those together. I actually outsource back some of the physical production of it, but we do the transcription of the tracking numbers and then match them all up and then get them ready for shipping, both wholesale and retail. And then putting together some assembly of my own personal products, which would be mostly of the Dr. B's line, which are the cache repair kits, the canine repair kits, which is first aid for your dog, and then the newbie kits also.
Now, you seem to be active online through communities like Twitter and Facebook. which seems to be valuable to both you and the customers. But has that translated into any sales for you?
It absolutely has, which is really exciting. I've been looking at this just as a way originally as when learning about, you know, more online opportunities and networking that way and getting my name out there to folks, but it's really become a very valuable tool. Folks can ask me questions right online. I get tweets directed at me, you know, can you tell me a little bit about this product and how will it work under these circumstances or more hints on geocaching, that sort of thing. And then all of a sudden a sale will come through on my website and they'll tweet back and say, oh, we found just the thing we wanted. Thank you so much. So, yeah, it's been a wonderful tool for me to really be able to connect with individuals and cachers and other businesses, too, to answer questions and, yeah, learn what people want to know.
In rough numbers, how much time does it take to run your shop on a weekly basis? And has that interfered with your caching at all?
Yes, it has interfered with my caching. I hardly ever get caching anymore. It's awful. I find what I do is I'll put together kind of a targeted day of caching with a couple of friends, and we'll go out. Like a couple days ago, a lot of you saw my tweets. We got 51 caches in one day. And yeah, it was a great day, and I was able to get a lot of caching in. But you asked about hours a day that I spend with my business. Any given day, it's probably between 4 and 8 to 12 hours. So, you know, it really depends on the week. If I'm, you know, prepping a lot, getting ready to go do a Woodstock, gosh, that's a lot of hours that I put in. Probably minimum is about 30 hours. You know, an old joke about being self-employed is you get to work half days, but you get to decide which 12 hours you're going to work.
Now, before we move on to our next question, if there's anyone in our chat room or on the phone or just listening and wants to ask Lisa any questions, give us a call. Our number is 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. If you're in the chat room, go ahead and press the request to talk at the upper right-hand corner, and we'll get you unmuted. Or go ahead and even just type it into the chat room if there's any questions for Lisa.
All right, Lisa, I got a question for you. I know that you're traveling a lot to all of these various events for the Cash Advance store. Can you tell us any of the difference between some of these events? Just a different feel, because I noticed that there's a big difference in the feel between things like Geo Woodstock and Midwest Geo Bash.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, well, Geo Woodstock, from my perspective as a vendor there, it was just a full day of being in a booth. I think I met everybody that was there, which was a really great way to do it. That, you know, folks coming up and shopping with me or taking a look, you know, they met me online or seen me, but here they am, you know, physically. So that was great. A lot of events I've done are campouts, which is really fun. You know, I'm there camping and caching, and then I'll pop up my booth and, you know, make some sales there for a few hours. I try to keep that really limited so I can have fun caching, and I don't want to be, you know, a walking commercial for my business all the time.
Yeah, that's one of the problems that we have when we go to a lot of these things is spending too much time on, you know, the podcast, essentially, when we go out there.
Right. You've got to mix it and have a good balance there, but it really targeting your time is what's best, and then you get the chance to be out and then do some caching. And that's important for us that are involved in these different aspects of the business of caching. We got to know what people are doing, how caches are being hidden, and how the game's evolving.
Now, from Club Mud in the chat room, it's just quickly thrown out a question. Are your prices competitive?
I would like to think they are, yes. I try to keep tabs of the other folks that are out there. The other businesses that are doing something similar to what I'm doing. I'm actually supplying a lot of them. So in that aspect, I know that we're competitive because we come up with agreements on, you know, what the suggested retail price needs to be. And we keep to that. I looked around like at the real REI, and boy, I'm a lot less than them in a lot of areas.
Now, last question before we let you get back to tweeting and filling your orders. What has your biggest success and fault been in caching?
Wow, that's a good question. Biggest success in caching. You know, I think for me, my biggest success has been meeting so many really neat people. You know, at events, again, like at Woodstock, I met hundreds of people, and local events, but also, you know, dozens and hundreds, and just out on the road. I made a lot of really good friends this way, and caching around, and also with my family. So I think that would be my biggest success for caching. Fault, boy, I don't know about that. Trying to think what would be a good fault. I guess I had a real hard time. The only thing that pops to my mind there is one cache I never got approved, and it was just too difficult. The way it was actually just too many waypoints that never came together. So I don't know. I can't really think of anything else. Oh, well, actually, another one would be a car wreck.
Oh, that's not good.
No, I was hit by a muggle. So that was a bad thing. Luckily, it wasn't my fault, so I'm not sure if that answers your question or not.
Well, Lisa, it doesn't look like there's any other questions for you in our chat room. We want to thank you for coming on our show tonight. I know when I saw your tweets, you know, it interested me to see, you know, just how you were doing making a living out of, you know, geocaching. You know, I know we all have dreamed about that and thought of a way to do that. So we want to kind of bring you on, and we want to thank you for being on tonight.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat about things and chat with you guys a little more on one-to-one too. So if there's ever any more questions I can answer about the business of caching or caching in general, let me know. I'd love to come on again.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks, Lisa. Now we had one other, question in our chat room that was not necessarily related to Lisa, but the Club Mud wanted to know if we had ever heard of a cache owner raising and lowering the difficulty level or terrain due to the amount of fines or DNFs. Usually I see that happen when we right before or after like it's placed, once, you know, the first couple days, but not usually after that. Daryl Montu?
Well, go ahead, Montu.
I haven't really heard of that too often, especially not based on the you know how the DNFs are versus fines at that time. I do know, you know, and I did this myself with the Excalibur cache, where a lot of the logs were saying that this is not as easy as the. Difficulty rating was saying. They were saying this definitely needs to be a higher rated cache, and I got enough people giving me the same feedback, so I did go in and change the rating on that. But just changing it on a whim, just because, oh, I got a bunch of people that didn't find it this week, and okay, this week I got a bunch that did find it. No, I've not actually seen that one happen.
Yeah, I think it is the responsibility as a good cache owner to pay attention to those logs, especially on the more challenging caches. And if you find that a lot of people are having problems with it for one reason or another, you may have to go check on it, but maybe you kind of underestimated or overestimated the difficulty. You know, if you're finding, 100 people logging it as a, wow, that wasn't as bad as I thought, then yeah, you probably need to drop it. But likewise, if they're contacting you for hints and can't really figure out where it is, then, yeah, it probably needs to be bumped up a little bit to, address that.
Now, I want to remind everybody, too, that I noticed while we were talking with Lisa, there was a lot of good information being passed in our chat room about GSAC and some other stuff like that, about waypoints and different information. So definitely check out our show notes at www.geocachingpodcast.info. There'll be a link to our show notes there, or to our chat room there. We want to thank everybody who showed up tonight. We want to thank special thanks to Lisa from www.cash-advance.com for joining us today. You can join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525, or you can go to TalkShoe.com. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info, or if you have a question during the week, give us a call at 206-350-3GPS anytime and leave us a voicemail. Have a great week and keep on caching.